Hey, podcast listener. Are you working so hard you wonder if the money is even worth it? If you're like most CPAs I work with, you have way too much to do, you feel relentless deadline pressure, and worst of all, you feel torn between serving clients and being with family. What if I told you you could work a 40-hour week without losing a dime? I know it sounds impossible, but my Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind is designed for CPAs just like you who want to get their lives back. Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind is launching soon. In it, you'll learn how to start getting your time back week by week, make your workload manageable while still bringing in plenty of revenue, what to put in your packages and how to price them, and so much more. Don't leave your future to chance. CPA Mastermind will get you on the sane, profitable path you've been searching for. With unlimited coaching, your success is guaranteed. Go to GeraldineCarter.com to learn more. Dates, times, pricing, it's all there.
I personally would see a problem, right, if I was in the office as an individual and I had no choice to go virtual, but they have to understand as well, in some cases, that may mean that virtual employee may be getting paid less than.
Welcome to the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast, where I help overworked CPAs go down to 40 hours and then down to 25 hours without giving up revenue. My name is Geraldine Carter. We are talking today about hiring remote, virtual, onshore staff and what you need to know to do that well. When I listen to clients talk about their challenges, a theme that comes up regularly has to do with staff and hiring and existing staff challenges, finding the right staff, what role you're looking for, where to look, what to pay, should you look locally or remote, should you go offshore, hire offshore, contract offshore, should you go to India, the Philippines, Mexico, all the questions. And because there are so many questions related to all things hiring and staffing, I'm doing a series of podcast episodes to get insight into the problems and solutions related to staff and hiring challenges. Because making hiring mistakes is really expensive in terms of money, time, and the emotional investment. But making a great hire can really pay off. And I want to help you hire as well as you can. This interview is the second in the series, and we are talking about hiring remote, virtual, onshore staff and what you need to know to do that well. My guest is Lawrence Whittam, founder of Impact Global Solutions. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Hi, Geraldine. Thank you for having me.
I'm happy you're here. So for listeners who haven't met you or haven't heard of you, just tell us briefly a little bit about Impact Global Solutions and why it is that you have the perspective and expertise to talk to us about this topic.
I started Impact Global Solutions last July. It's a consulting firm. We work with CPA firms. I've had the experience of working with over 500 accounting firms and CPA firms over the past 10 years, specifically around talent. Traditionally working with the offshoring side of things in mind. And the reason for starting my consulting practice was because there's so many great onshore options and offshore options. And it all comes down to the same thing, which is virtual working. And how do you really manage a virtual staff when we're doing this? And there are ways that correlate very strongly between the offshore and the onshore. And firms just really have struggled with it. So this is where I started consulting in this space to really help them with that process. And make sure that they have everything and they're very well prepared to actually taking that first step. Because as you said, it's very costly otherwise.
Yeah, if you screw it up, it's really costly. It's painful. And despite the accent, tell us where you are.
So I'm in New Jersey, but originally from the UK.
Typical New Jersey accent.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a mixture now, but it's more New Jersey than the UK now.
So. I don't know about that. Okay. So let's dive in here with what you see when accountants begin hiring virtually. What are some of the classic mistakes that they make? Unbeknownst to them, you know, we all kind of fall into traps for the first time we're doing things. What are the classic mistakes that you see them making?
I mean, it encompasses a lot of different areas, to be honest. I mean, I would say one of the biggest things is even just getting started with it in terms of, have you defined very clear roles and expectations for the team member coming on, right? We all look at it from a recruitment perspective, I believe. And it comes to, yes, we put together a job description, but generally by doing that, it's very different for us, right, to do that. So we put a bit of everything on there. And we don't necessarily really think about the role wholeheartedly as to, is this very clearly outlining what that person's going to be responsible for doing. So that would be like one of those core starting pieces. that I see a problem.
What is not being included in the job description?
I would say that it's more of the day-to-day, right, as to what they really expect of that team member. So what we'll put in is there, we'll say, okay, there's going to be bank reconciliations to be done. There's going to be the typical accounting day-to-day that will be going on. Whereas we don't go into as much detail in terms of like really how, what are the expectations of that? Whether is it 70% of their time that they're going to be doing the bank recs? Is it only 20% of the time? Are they going to be doing the full process with a client from day one compared to necessarily breaking down the processes so that they only just have to learn a little bit day one? And then maybe as they get the hang of things after month three, now they can start working on interacting with the client, for example, and doing so. It's more of we ask for everything immediately in terms of what we want from the end stage, which we shouldn't really do, because a lot of the times the firms have different processes internally where we can actually break down the processes into a much more defined structure where we're more likely to find the talent we really want. And then we can groom them on those next steps down the line.
Gotcha. So it's almost like instead of, I'm picturing a sort of traditional resume with some high level sections and some bullet points listed underneath. It sounds to me almost like creating a little bit more of a narrative of here's what it's going to be like working here, and here's what it's going to be like at the beginning, and here's where this can go. Am I following you? Am I on track? Is it something different?
Yeah, no, exactly on track, but it's a piece, it's an element of doing that on the piece of paper, right, in terms of the actual job description, but also making sure that that's the case internally when they're coming on board, right? So not saying that, yeah, we're looking for this, but then having a role that doesn't actually fit what was written on that piece of paper, right, for the job description, because now your expectations are very misaligned, right? And you may be looking for the all-star, but so is everybody else, right? So you're not going to be able to get, like, it's very, a lot more difficult to get that at the end of the day.
Right, okay. So making sure that what you promise the job is going to be is actually what the job turns out to be.
Correct.
Either inadvertently or intentionally, but not misleading the person that you hire and selling something different than what they're actually getting.
Correct.
Is that a key thing? Like, does that happen all the time that the job description is not aligned to like the actual job?
Yeah. So they'll grab a typical job description off like anything. They'll literally just grab a job description from somewhere else that a senior accountant is or an accountant is. They'll put that together, but it doesn't really like fit within what their actual scope of work is doing. So it's, and then it's also from the interview perspective, it's now making sure that, okay, is this person capable of doing these types of things? Like everybody's, they just put the same things on the traditional. If you look at like 10 different senior accountant resumes and job descriptions, I guarantee the majority of them, 80% of them are probably exactly the same.
Just a copy paste cookie cutter.
Correct.
So go get the job description for some inspiration and some guidance, but then make it your own and have it match what you think the job is actually going to be for that person.
Correct.
Okay. Speaking of communicating clearly what the responsibilities are going to be, what else do people run into around communication and expectations?
So when it comes to communication, I mean, I think the biggest thing there is, especially in the virtual workforce that we're talking about, is we don't really think about how important making sure that we know how to communicate with each other is, because everybody has a different way of learning, communicating. Like some people are much more visual learners from that perspective. They prefer to get on a, some people prefer to get on a call to discuss certain problems when they come up, and other people like a document that they can refer to and really go into detail. So that's where it's understanding who you are hiring is a very important feature to that as well, because if you don't know that, then the way that you're potentially training them may not be the right fit for them. The way that you're communicating in terms of here are the job roles and responsibilities, this is the feedback approach that I'm going to take with this person, it may not be a good fit, and you may end up offending somebody. You may end up getting them to shut down rather than open up and start learning from it, right? So there are ways that we have to be careful, because again, everybody just is a different type of person, right, in that sense. So, and you see that more when you go outside of your current area geographically.
So how can you tell if, let's just say, for example, you find what you think is a great hire, you onboard them, you're beginning to train them. How can you tell if perhaps their learning style is different than what you might have teed up for them? What are some of the symptoms of that going
to
be?
I think part of it, how you get around it, is communicating well. From your end, you have to be a good communicator as a leader by, and that can be being reasonably direct with asking that question initially, right? To figure out what is the best way they feel that they learn best. How is it best to communicate to them if something is going? And again, you have to be able to test, right? In terms of, all right, do I give quite direct feedback? Is that going to work? And the thing that we lose a lot of the time when we are virtually working is this interaction of, we see body language, right? And typically people are better at adjusting how they communicate by looking at body language. So this is where virtual working is, you've got to make sure that people are on camera. Right. It's a very, very big thing to make sure that people are showing up in person on the camera. You can tell them from the start, like, listen, I understand you're at home sometimes. You've got kids around, like making sure that the environment is good for you and making sure it's an open environment for them to communicate back is very important. But if they do not have this type of physical language, it's very difficult to know whether you're doing the right thing or not as a leader.
Right. You can't tell how they're responding to the situation that they're in.
And I think I can add from a simple side, right? I mean, when it comes to communication, is really just that communication channel as well is very important. Because again, we can't go and sit next to somebody and start having a conversation with them. Some people prefer to have a direct Teams message and to them whenever there's a problem, right? And I would prefer to address something with you immediately. The other side of it is other people prefer, can you give me a list and we'll have a meeting at the end of the day, right? We'll address all these things. I would prefer you going on to the next project, right? And getting as far as you can with that. Let's have a meeting at the end of the day. But like those types of boundaries that are set up very clearly initially from day one. And this is the way that as a leader, we want it, right? As well, so that the expectation is clear. Now you're going to be able to get it that way as well. If you never set up those expectations, which many people don't, you get sporadic messages all over, and like some people just get flustered by it, and it doesn't become efficient.
So do you think it's up to the leader to decide how the staff person ought to communicate with them? Like, ping me as soon as you get stuck, or stack them all up, we'll talk at 3 o'clock. Do you think that's up to the leader, or do you think the leader bends to the staff person?
I believe it depends on the size of the organization to some extent, right? I believe personally that managers should be open to different forms, right? There's a specific mindset and personality that a manager should have, and they should be open, like they should be able to communicate in multiple varieties with their team. In comparison to a staff member may not have multiple ways that they can appropriately do it. So it's more who is the more flexible, but you have to have a process, whether it's messaging directly over Teams, whether it's messaging a few times a day, whether it's bringing it up in certain meetings. There needs to be some structure to it with whichever modes that you allow the communication, because otherwise you can't scale.
Yeah. So process, not willy-nilly.
Correct.
Willy-nilly is not scalable.
No.
Let's go back to training for just a minute. And I'm imagining a CPA who's super busy and they're like, their training manuals, maybe, let's just say, not quite fully baked. And they're hearing you say, like, some people like to be taught by video, some people like to read stuff, some people are more audio, and some people like to just do it themselves, get their hands dirty, make a mess, break things, and then learn from it. So now I have to have four modalities with which to train my people to accommodate how they learn. So that I just can imagine that being like, oh God. So how, if that's the case, then how do they handle that?
So I don't know what you're talking about, half-baked. I mean, I see perfect training all over. And so, yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that I personally believe and have seen that training should be getting easier, right? And the reason why is because we have, like, AI is becoming a great tool to utilize, because now, even if you personally are not the best at breaking down a process, right, or creating a training procedure, there are tools like, there's one called Scribe AI, for example. It will record your screen as you're doing your process. It will then take it. It will break it down for you into step by step. It will document it for you, right? We've got different tools that can be utilized now to actually produce things in different ways, right? Very easily, seamlessly, without having to necessarily go and re-record things, right? And go out of your way to like script things yourselves and those types of areas. So it's become a lot easier to do it. Now, should people have different modes and ways of doing it? Yes, I think there should be different varieties, right? And that's where I believe now, if you've got something documented, the thing with training is it needs to be changed as you're changing your process, right? We need to update it quite regularly. When we do that, when whatever mode you do it in, let's make sure that we find a way to now put it into a different direction. Like, do we just have a video right now? With a video, you get audio typically. Now let's put it into a document as well. Okay, so now you've got three ways immediately just by doing a video that you can do it. The one piece that I think we're missing in virtual training a lot of the times is the shadowing, because we used to having somebody come in the office and sit next to us sometimes, and they may sit for hours overseeing you, watching what you're doing. Whereas I think I've personally seen that piece is missing right now, because we don't have somebody screen share and really just sit and watch what I'm doing for a couple of days, right? And ask me questions as I'm going through. But that type of learning is very important for some people, like to really see that. And also the trainers may not be as used to necessarily putting together these documents. So having them sit and just oversee and ask questions is definitely a way that we've seen training going on throughout the years, but now we're missing it. Right? That's something that can't go on.
So what suggestions or ideas do you have for people who want to offer to be shadowed, or for staff who want to shadow? How can you do that in a remote environment?
Yeah. So it's a screen share at the end of the day. I mean, it needs to be brought up by managers. If you want to have one-on-ones where I'm working on a project for you, I know that you need to do this, so we're going to go over it. There should be time dedicated to that. And just like you have office hours, essentially, when you're in a school, right? You go into the office hours, you can sit and you can go over things one-on-one. This can be a session where the managers are really going through their work and showcasing, look, this is how we're doing this set of accounts, right? This is how, for this type of industry, we should be addressing this. This is how I communicate with the clients on a regular basis. And now you can do it sort of real time, right? And literally just share the screen for the day and have them shadow you. Now, what that will do is both, A, it'll help with the training and the learning side of things, but it will also help very strongly with building a relationship with that person, which again is generally quite a lot more difficult when we're working virtually, unless you're on a camera and you're talking to them quite consistently. But that human element comes back, because you're not going to sit in silence for those 6-7 hours of the day. You're going to have regular conversations as you're going along as well, right? So you bring back that human element to it, in my opinion.
So how do you make sure in a remote and virtual environment that the work gets done the way that you want it, when you might not have the same proximity that you would in an office?
So standard operating procedures is the big key term, SOPs. You'll hear it everywhere. I believe the key point when we talk about SOPs is up-to-date SOPs that have been adapted, that people are really revisiting regularly to make sure that they are aligning with what you are currently doing and making sure they are understood across the board, right? You shouldn't have multiple SOPs for the same type of task across different employees, and you'll find that very commonly, right? So it needs to be a standard across the firm. And now with that, is having strong controls, right? Because problems will come up, changes will come up, but we need to make sure there is a check, right? So that's where that quality piece comes in. There needs to be something so that the manager can review and ensure that in their process, it's aligning with that standard operating procedure. So that there is that piece of, yeah, I'm going to review this element. I'm going to do this. It shouldn't just go through one source and go direct to the client, because then there is no quality control check, realistically. There has to be multiple people or multiple steps separated for that. So quite modular.
I think some CPAs, when they think about going remote or virtual, one of their thoughts is my person going to be productive if I don't have eyes on them? So how do you make sure that when you hire, you're going to hire people who are set up to be productive in a remote environment? And not like off doing the laundry with some little Chrome extension that makes their mouse move.
Well, the big thing there from that perspective, it has to be reporting and controls that are in place, right? So there has to be metrics that you are tracking from across the board, just from productivity standpoint, right? You should have KPIs, right? Key progress indicators, right? That you have metrics for the firm saying these accounts should be done by this day, right? Not just the due dates, but roughly how long are these projects taking, right? And now it's not that you need to do that necessarily. There's a lot of software out there from a project management perspective that will track it in the background. Like you log into a task, you start working on it, you click off the task. But again, that process needs to be there. If you're not using the tools correctly, none of that reporting feature in the background is ever going to work, right? So, and the piece about the going off and doing your laundry quickly and those types of, to me, I like to get away from that time billing conversation, right? If somebody's doing their job and they're hitting their deadlines and they're being productive in the time when they're sat there and they're being more productive in some cases than other people, if they need to, and you've got to be understanding as a leader that they're in their home, they may want to go switch a load of laundry, right? Now, that also comes to the, you need to somewhat know that, okay, they're balancing that. They're making sure that, okay, if they have to stay late to make sure that they're hitting deadlines or whatever the case, they're going to do that, right? There needs to be that element of trust. But the way that you build that out is simply the reporting feature within these softwares, like making sure that you as a leader or a manager is assessing these, looking at those, tracking to make sure there is an improvement over time as well from the people that are working on this, but also they understand the metrics themselves, how much time certain tasks take. If you just give an assignment without knowing how long it takes, how are you ever going to know whether that person is being productive on it?
How about for the CPA who is hiring a remote person, and that remote person doesn't want to work from home or does want to work from home, but you'd rather they work in an office? How do you navigate the conversation around whether that person finds their own office or chooses to work from home? What does that look like? Because some people do better in an office environment and or need to get out of the house so they don't go crazy. So, but they're not coming to your office. So what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that leaders should be a lot more flexible now as to where people are working right now. If somebody, if the person works better in an office environment, then I believe that the leader should be willing to invest in a place for them to go to do that in some cases, right? Now that may not be in day one, right? That may be over time, right? I mean, you can look into different memberships, but you're going to have a balance of people that do work better in an office than do not. I believe when it comes to that in-person element, I personally believe is very important. So whether it's a few times a year, you should go and see each other in some capacity, get together in a centralized spot, a good work culture type spot and environment. I've seen some groups of teams going to get in an Airbnb or all staying over there together. Personally, I don't think that's the right step to stay stage one, because there are a lot of things as a business owner you've got to really think about when that is coming up. But going and doing a work retreat and staying in a hotel and taking a few days together in some capacity, that is okay, right? I mean, that is a very business professional environment, but it means that it's creating a good work culture together, right? Compared to some firms, again, they go and do the holidays together, like certain things, and take the trips away. And I've seen it, and I'm sure it's a great culture, but you do have to think about it from a HR perspective as well, from a leadership environment. So I don't advise that at all, but I think it's cool that they can do it. Yes. And I just hope that nothing bad ever happens from those things. So
I'm grimacing over here because I'm just like, oh God, the legal team is like, oh, I don't know if I want to sign off on an Airbnb in Austin in a party house. That's just what could possibly go wrong.
Yeah.
What about when somebody goes from wanting to work in the office to wanting to work from home or wanting to work remote, or say they are moving across the country and transition from office to remote? What does the CPA need to be thinking about for the staff person who transitions from office to remote?
I personally think, again, it comes down to that. Are they trusted to do that? In that sense as well, like if they've been in the office already, you've built up somewhat of a relationship with them. I think that you need to think about it from the perspective of, if you do trust them, you can't hold them back to some extent from the perspective of, oh no, but you're not going to be as productive or anything, because you haven't necessarily seen whether or what, whether they can or cannot do that. But they do need to then transition. I would say, again, I've seen in a lot of cases where it's a bit more lax in the office in terms of that productive, because you can see people working, they may be X productive, but now you need to bring it to that metric side of things, right? You need to make sure that you're able to say, okay, they've been this productive, and you need to have that conversation of, we need to make sure that you're still hitting these types of deadlines, we're still hitting these productivity metrics, because you then need to treat it in that environment. But generally speaking, it's, you want to work with people you know and you trust. So you've got to make sure, why are they, you understand why they're moving in a lot of cases. Is it personal reasons? Is it going to make them more or less incentivized to work, right? In some senses too, because you've got to understand that if they're going for something that's going to stop them from working as well, you need to make sure you know that, right? So I would say it's more of that conversation. I would never hold somebody back for doing that. I don't think there should be any reason to, but maybe setting that expectation of meeting up on occasions as well to make sure there is that still interpersonal thing. But I saw there was a lot less struggle for team members that had already been together, then went hybrid or virtual, compared to those that joined an organization completely virtual. Personally.
Yeah. Okay. So I do want to talk about that. I'm glad you brought that up, because the teams who start out knowing each other in person then go virtual, less struggle compared to the ones who add virtual. The piece I want to pull on here is, what if you have a sort of hybrid team in that you have some people in the office and some people who are remote and virtual? How do you, I don't know if integrate is the right word. How do you manage that so that the local team is happy and the remote team is also happy? Because there could be, you know, challenges, perceptions of unfairness, and so on. So what are some things to watch out for there?
I would say it's more of an interpersonal thing, like in terms of talking to everybody individually, right? And knowing what things keep them moving, right? In a sense of ticking in the right direction, right? What things, maybe the things that slow them down. And again, this comes back to everything from the training perspective to how we work on a process side of things. But by individually knowing the team members that you have, you get to know whether these struggles come up, right? And if they are seeing that as an issue themselves, right? But my big thing is being transparent across the organization. I mean, I say it for whether it's going virtual, right, in terms of having team members virtually across nationwide, whether it's going international, working with teams, it needs to be from the managing director or the partner all the way down to the associates need to understand why, right? And they need to be on board for the same why and vision the organization has. The how we do it, in terms of, again, there may be different ways you have to approach it with different individuals, can be different. But it's the why, everybody, that same why needs to be common throughout, okay? Because then everybody's a bit more comfortable. There's an clear expectation there. And again, there's a balance. I mean, I personally would see a problem, right, if I was in the office as an individual and I had no choice to go virtual, right? But they have to understand as well, in some cases, that may mean that virtual employee may be getting paid less than them, right? Because they've got the flexibility to do something. So there are factors there that, unless everything is brought out on the table, you're never going to really find a super common ground. As an organization, as a business, you do have to think about it from a general basis sometimes, because you have to be able to scale. And this is why we talk about standard operating procedures as well, because it doesn't fit for everybody in some cases.
So this is what I'm hearing. These are my takeaways from this so far. Number one, transparency. It's easier to have transparent conversations than to not talk about things that need to be talked about. Number two, the importance of clear communication and maintaining frequent, at the right cadence, communication, so that, and like not leaving your remote people, like just hanging out there by themselves. Number three, the importance of systems and processes. And embedded in that is managing to the outcomes and not necessarily the time or the time of day that the work gets done. And number four is really know your people. not only to maintain the culture and make sure that they feel like, you know, they're not being forgotten, but also to know kind of what they need, because people as staff need different things in terms of guidance and so on. This has been super helpful. If people want to find out more about you, your company, if listeners want to know more, where can they find you?
Yes, so I'm all over LinkedIn, so you can look me up, Lawrence Whittam, or on my website, bizproblemsolver.com is a great place.
And we'll link to both of those in the show notes. Lawrence Whittam, this has been so great. Thank you so much for coming on the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast.
Thanks, Geraldine. Thanks for having me.
Hi again. Would you rather spend your weekends outside playing or at your desk? In Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind, we put an end to overworking while maintaining revenue. Go to geraldinecarter.com to learn more. Dates, times, pricing, it's all there.